What's up, Beardos? You're listening to episode 225 of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Let me answer your question first. I'm not answering your question. I really hope people didn't tune into yours talking about beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. You can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's mini episode, we're going to answer the question, is Saved by the Barn the response to Tiger King that the animal rights community needs?
Oh, Paul, today I think we're cashing in on that promise to do something light and easy and breezy because we all need it right now.
Yes, no, for sure, Andy. And that's why I think a show review episode is the perfect thing to do that. We didn't have to do a tremendous amount of preparation. We could just talk about this show and then be on our way. So I hope that the listeners enjoy this one, though. I think Andy, we've discussed this show before, correctly? We were kind of anticipating it. And so here we are. The episode came out literally today. So we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. And so if you are not familiar with what Saved by the Barn is, it's a new show on Animal Planet that follows Dan McKernan and this journey of opening and running a farmed animal sanctuary. I don't know if we've really discussed it at all on the show. I know that you and I, between us, we've been like, ooh, this should be a really interesting thing to watch. And perhaps it'll just be something really light and fluffy, and perhaps we'll have some bigger issues with it. But I think it's especially timely right now, both in terms of us just needing something positive to talk about, but also because it has been sort of framed in all the press releases and the media as being the anti-Tiger King, which obviously we've devoted quite some recording time to. So we thought it'd be interesting to discuss something that's kind of, I don't know if the people that are on the show are trying to do this or if it's just the PR firm or someone else, you know, caught on to that angle, but they're certainly pushing that angle. So we will see if it lives up to that hype. I would say you do not need to have seen Tiger King to listen to the rest of this episode. It would be hard to imagine people don't have a general idea of what Tiger King is all about at this point, due to it reaching extreme meme saturation at this point, but we will summarize it just a little bit. Paul, I will say that a few people did ask, are we going to review the eighth episode of Tiger King that came out recently? And we were thinking it might be fun to do that, maybe just like a quick little like live stream kind of thing. And then I watched it and I was like, Paul, there's no reason for you to watch this unless you really want to, unless you're very curious about what they're doing here, because it is very much not the show. It's basically an after show. It's like a Talking Dead type, after show where there's some snarky comments made about it with like some celebrities, and the celebrity in this case, Joel McHale, hosting a series of Zoom calls with kind of the like mid-tier humans. I want to say characters, but humans that were on Tiger King.
Wish they called it Talking Tigers.
Tiger Talk.
With I feel Click like and Clack, the Clackett brothers. Tiger Talk.
Paul, they gave it a much worse name. The Tiger King and I.
Yeah, that's not a good name. Yes, Andy, I feel no desire to, especially you didn't even really tell me like you didn't go into the details, but just your general gist of describing it to me, I was like, this sounds boring as heck, and I don't think I need to watch this.
Yeah, I mean, basically my general summary is, if you are curious for 38 minutes of small talk, like very uninteresting small talk with the people that were on this show, if you're interested in gaining nothing of substance to supplement your viewing, you could go watch the eighth episode of Tiger King.
I am curious. Did they interview Carol Baskin again or anyone in her crew?
No, you know, honestly, I feel like nobody involved in the initial production was involved in this eighth episode.
Huh.
It just doesn't ring of any of the flavor of the original show, because we had been hearing rumors that, oh, they're going to, by rumors, I mean, in interviews with the creator saying, hey, we still have more footage that hasn't been used. Like, there's going to be more Tiger King. And obviously that's really hard to put together in a matter of, you know, weeks. I think maybe two weeks since this whole thing has come out, maybe slightly longer. But it's, I think that if there was any illusion of an altruistic intent to the series, this extra episode shatters that. It's basically Joel McHale making some quippy remarks, kind of making fun of some of the people, throwing a couple fat jokes here and there. And it's basically him saying, like, hey, how's it feel to be famous? And they're like, oh, man, it's wild. You know, like, of course, like, it's weird that they get stopped in Walmart parking lots five times trying to get into the store and stuff like that. And it's really tasteless. They ask the I forget who the guy was that said, fuck the feds. Who witnessed the suicide that's on the show. They're like, hey, how'd that feel to see that? You know, and you're just like, what is this? So suffice it to say, I think that's probably all we're going to talk about this show. But certainly if there was any facade that you were like, but maybe this show is going to draw attention to the plight of these domesticated cats. Certainly this last episode is just like, nope, it's Jerry Springer. This is what you came for. And just the fact that we picked Joel McHale to host it kind of just reveals that, like, we know what he does. It'd be like picking, like, Ryan Reynolds to host it. You're like, this is like the sarcastic jerk guy. And not to say I don't like some of the stuff he's done, but, like, it's sort of just very clear what they know what they have with the show. And if it started out as one thing, it certainly didn't become it. And it certainly has not been, you know, this was a chance to address some of the concerns with the storytelling of the show, and they were like, nah, how about some Zoom calls? So that's that.
Yeah. Andy, I mean, I feel like it's possible that Netflix was just like, you need to do this thing, you know? Like, Netflix just kind of made them do it because they're trying to cash in on it.
I would imagine with whatever the contract was, Netflix was like, we're going to do whatever the hell we want to wring some more viewership hours out of this thing. And I wouldn't even be surprised if the creators and like the original makers of this had no say in it whatsoever, which is not to say that they would have made something significantly more altruistic or anything. But anyway, don't waste your time.
And let's not waste any more time on this episode talking about Tiger King, Andy, because that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about Saved by the Barn.
My name is Dan McKernan, and I'm the founder of Barn Sanctuary. We rescue farm animals from cases of abuse, neglect, and natural disasters. And they come to our farm, get rehabilitated, and live out the rest of their natural lives. 3 years ago, I was working for a tech company in Austin, Texas. I was making six figures, and then my dad gave me a call. He asked me what we should do with the family farm, and I knew what I had to do with my life. So I quit my job, I moved up to Michigan, and turned my family farm into a sanctuary for farm animals. And today, because of Barn Sanctuary, the animals, this farm, and my family have a whole new life. I traded a good living for a great life, but it's so much harder.
This show can be streamed for free on Animal Planet right now. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. And so far, only the very first episode's out, so that's all we're going to be talking about. And we can discuss how we're feeling about what's been put on screen so far, our hopes and dreams for the future of this show. So the plot synopsis provided by Animal Planet for episode one, spring has sprung in Michigan, and Barn Sanctuary prepares to open the pastures. Dan and Kelly head down to Iowa to rescue a lamb called Ginger, who is in need of major medical attention, and Dan's twin Chris is home and ready to be put to work. So this is a series that is all about Barn Sanctuary, which is founded by Dan McKernan about 3 years ago, if I recall correctly from the series. And his backstory is essentially that he had some desk job that was paying him $100,000 a year. And 3 years ago, he decided to give that up to start a farmed animal sanctuary that was the family farm. And the dad was trying to sell it, but was kind of feeling hesitant to sell it, apparently. And he said, let's make it a sanctuary for farmed animals.
Andy, are you sure that his backstory is that he had a desk job and then he quit it to start this? I don't know if they said that in the episode.
It felt like they had a quota. They had to mention it every 5 to 6 minutes. Anyway, Paul, this show, in comparison to Tiger King, which is one that is just, Tiger King is just absolutely over the top, wild, flashy, abusive human beings, characters. I guess they are almost characters in the true sense of the word. They're larger than life, and there's murder plots, and there is like no attention paid to the animals almost whatsoever. It's very minute and very tacked on. It's certainly, we are in our reviews of it, we certainly did not read it as any sort of tale that's actually going to help these big cats in captivity to any, you know, substantial amount. So, Paul, my question for you is, how are you feeling about this first episode of Saved by the Barn? And is it being aptly marketed as the anti-Tiger King?
Andy, I think my general thoughts about it are that it is not doing anything, like, I don't think it's destructive, but I also don't know. I'll say this. I don't think it's destructive, but I also think there are many missed opportunities for promoting the message that I would have hoped that they would have been promoting a lot, in that I think it's a very human centric show, but certainly not in the way that Tiger King was. I think it's human centric, in that, like, they focus a lot more on, you know, like how Dan quit his six-figure desk job and how he's saved the family farm, and now he's bringing his bro into work. And it's all these, like, I feel like they don't, and it's probably because they don't have, you know, they don't have compelling stories about the animals, I guess. And they're like, okay, but we need to make a dramatic TV show that people are going to want to watch, so we're going to bring in these human elements to it. I just felt like, Andy, there were, and I could go into detail about this later, but in general, I felt like there was a lot of missed opportunities to make the show about the animals.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, and I would have to say that, like, right off the bat, I feel like the vast majority of criticisms in something like this are directed towards the people at Animal Planet that are putting it together, and not so much the people that work at Barn Sanctuary. I don't know. I don't know how much say people have. My understanding is that, especially on a show like this, the people that are putting on the show, they're creating the show, they probably have the most leverage, and they know the story they're trying to tell, and it's very crafted, like reality TV, which is how I would categorize this, or, you know, like documentary TV or something. It is known for trying to craft compelling storylines, so it's hard to know how much of this is stuff left on the cutting room floor from the folks that are being filmed, and how much of it is the people that are crafting this show trying to tell a specific story.
Yeah, no, I think that's certainly true. I'm sure that Dan McKernan is not, like, the one editing this show, and really, like, the editors are kind of, as we saw in Tiger King, which was very manipulatively edited. It's like, you can edit it to basically get across the exact message that you want to get across. If you want this person to be the bad guy, you're going to edit it that way, and you can edit it that way. Now, of course, there's no real bad guy in this show, which, Andy, I wish that there was. I wish that the bad guy was the animal agricultural industry, but it is not. It is, in fact, not mentioned once, I don't believe.
Yeah, I would say that I would agree that this show is kind of the anti-Tiger King in almost every aspect. You know, on the plus side of it, it's the anti-Tiger King because I think it does actually give personality to these animals. The show talks about their fears and needs and desires, and shows moments of humans being very kind to these animals and comforting them, getting, you know, like, the, I'm thinking specifically about this scene where the cows are in the, I forget what it's called, like the cow hugger or whatever, that, like, holds the cow in place, and, like, the dad's there. He just says, I'm just trying to give him some solace. Let him know he's not alone. You know, like, that is so much better than anything we ever got in Tiger King.
Yeah.
And for that, I really enjoyed this show. On the negative side of it, it also is lacking in any sense of tension. Like you said, there's no bad guy on the show when there is a clear actual bad guy in real life. Like, what, you know, what is more dramatic than this like evil industry that they're rescuing animals from? So who knows? I do not know what Barn Sanctuary's deal is in terms of rescues, if they ever pay for animals, if they only accept people that call them in, if they ever accept, you know, people that have done kind of direct action, open liberation type stuff, if they accept those animals. And maybe we'll find out more of that as the show goes on. But I would say the show is definitely, aside from, I guess, my professional vegan curiosity, I don't really feel particularly compelled to continue to watch the show. Like, there wasn't anything that's like, oh, I got to see what happens next time. But I do overall, I'm like, I'm glad this is on TV. I think this is nice. It's very fluffy. It feels very like just kind of like a throwaway show that some people might latch onto because they like cute animals. But I think that on like the downside of it being the anti-Tiger King is that there isn't really much in terms of compelling storytelling, which I think the producers were trying to wring out of it. You know, like, Paul, why this sanctuary? Why this human, you know, leader of the sanctuary as opposed to all the others that are going out there? You know, who knows? Could be right person, right time, whatever. But this is probably more of an interesting story than someone that's been running a sanctuary for 20 years. And there isn't that, oh, we're trying to figure out how to do this aspect of it, which is a lot of the show is like, hey, we don't know how to calm down Roy the rooster, or we don't know how to take care of these animals, you know, like the whole thing of that's like where they're trying to find some amount of tension. I understand that's why they would pick this particular sanctuary, but unfortunately I feel like the storytelling is just not super compelling to me.
Andy, I do want to get back to Roy the rooster because I got something to say about Roy the rooster, but I will say this for me personally, the fact that there wasn't like the drama or the tension, that did not bother me, because I just like, I enjoyed watching something that just had like, that just had animals being happy. And that was like the entire footage. There was no, in this episode, at least there was zero graphic footage, right? Would you agree with that? Like, yeah, they showed animals, some of the animals that they rescued, they were like, oh, this is the animal when they first got them. So it was animals in like poorer condition, but not like graphic. I didn't think graphic at all. So I was like, this is nice. It was a nice 40 minutes where I could just get a lot of footage of happy, like genuinely happy animals. When they get released on the pasture at the end, they're all kind of like jumping around, and it was really, really nice. And Andy, I would watch another episode just because I'm like, oh, this is just a nice thing I could have in the background and be watching. And like, I just can look up and see all these nice, beautiful animals.
I definitely agree. I think that some of my favorite shows are shows like Parks and Rec, where it's just like people that like each other for the most part, I guess, with the exception of like Jerry, people that are capable for the most part and like each other, helping each other out. Like, I really like that. There's like a makeup effects show on Sci-Fi Network or something called Face Off. And it's about people that do like sci-fi makeup. And unlike other, you know, it's a competition show. People get eliminated every episode because, you know, in the panel of judges, all that stuff you're used to seeing. But people really help each other out. Like, oh, this one person has finished their mask. The other person's having a hard time getting out of the mold. And they run over and help them. And I love that. I'm like, I want more of that. So I don't want my acknowledgement of the fact that there is no sort of dramatic tension as saying I want it to be there. But just that it's more of acknowledgement that I feel like it might be hard for it to hold the attention of some people. You know, everything down to it feels like a cookie cutter animal show. Like, look how cute animals are. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think especially because it's showing animals that are typically ignored and abused and called it and given no consideration whatsoever. I think this show is phenomenal that it actually gives personality to these animals and shows consideration for their wants and needs. But I guess I'm fearful that it will continue over many, many seasons. Even though I'm not like, I need to see the next episode, I'm sure I will watch many episodes of this show, especially now that I know that it's free on Animal Planet.
Yeah. And Andy, and at the very beginning of the episode, the beginning montage was just a footage of all the animals, and it had like their names underneath all the animals. And that was really nice. You're right. It like really I don't know if this is speciesist of me. It really personified all of the animals. But I do agree with you that it does not have the nature that will make it a viral hit like Tiger King was.
Yeah, I don't think it's speciesist to say that, Paul. I think that we often hear people saying, you know, they're non-human persons. So I think that personify or giving personality to them is totally in line with being cool.
So, Andy, I think just kind of circling back to my big criticism of it, my big criticism was that, like, they didn't even really acknowledge, like, factory farming or just animal agriculture at all. I would have to go back and watch, like, the very first part because at that point I wasn't trying to keep an eye out for it, but at the very beginning, I'm pretty sure they just say, like, oh, we rescue animals that have been hurt or abandoned or, like, are unwanted anymore. And now looking back, I was like, that's a weird kind of roundabout way of talking about, like, animals that were, I'm assuming, since these are literally all farm animals that were previously in the animal agricultural business. But they never once mention that's where these animals come from. And I thought that was so strange. That was a very strange choice.
You know, speaking of terminology, Paul, I don't know if you've caught onto this. I usually say farmed animals because I think that these animals, calling them farm animals implies that is their nature. That's what they're here for. Whereas farmed animals changes it to imply that something is being done to them. You know, that's something that I've seen many people adopt and I wish more people would adopt.
Thank you, Andy. That was a good, thank you for correcting me on that. Cause that is a very good point. I appreciate that.
But yeah, I agree. And Paul, this is my hope for the rest of the series. My hope and assumption, you know, who knows what'll happen with these assumptions and my wild speculation is that they're going to ease people into a situation where an animal is being rescued from a place where the average viewer probably supports with their consumer dollars. I think that if they probably know full well that if those animals, if those stories were like front and center on the first episode, that they're probably going to lose a lot of people. And I think it would probably be a very smart tactic to hit them with a couple of feel good story episodes first before they go into the animal agriculture thing. But I agree. I think even though we think all animal agriculture is the issue, people love to hate factory farms, even people who eat animals. And so it does feel like a kind of an obvious bad guy for the show to be like those dang factory farms. And we'd be having a discussion right now about how they don't paint all animal agriculture as a problem. But it seems like such a clear, easy bad guy to make of the show. And we'll see if they go there.
Yeah, and another specific instance where I thought it was weird that they didn't bring this up was when they were shearing the sheep, and you know they're shearing the sheep and I don't know, the newbie guy, what is his name, Chris, Dan's brother, is kind of like, oh, I didn't know sheep could like grow wool this long, and then one of the people is like, yeah, they're the only animal that can't like shed their own wool. And then I was waiting for them to say like, oh, and this is, you know, like this is a byproduct of being farmed for so long, but then they didn't bring that up. And I feel like that is like, to me, that's one of those things that's like one of the top 10 misconceptions people have about farmed animals. Number one, of course, being that cows produce milk all the time, but somewhere down that list in top 10 is definitely like, oh, sheep need to be shorn. And if they didn't, they wouldn't survive in the wild, you know?
Yeah. And Paul, again, that comes back to, did they say that in the interview and it got cut for time? I don't know. I could easily see someone actually saying that, but who knows? But I agree that it felt like an easy hole in one. You're 1 inch from the cup. You just got to knock it right in.
just tap it in.
And the show did not do that, which was definitely a disappointment. And I hope that they do more to take advantage of that in the future.
Yeah. So it was really, Andy, for me, it was those sorts of things that they didn't do something that was necessarily bad, but they just like, they were so close to doing the thing that I wanted them to do. And they just fell a little bit short. Like when, going back to Roy the Rooster, cause there's the whole thing about, they put these basically blinders on Roy to make him less aggressive.
Were they called peepers?
Peepers, I believe. Jeepers.
Right? They're like the opposite of blinders.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true because it covers the front and lets you see it out the sides. But the purpose of it is to make Roy less aggressive, but they kind of frame it as we need Roy to be less aggressive, or at least the editing frames it as we need Roy to be less aggressive so he stops pecking us. But I'm wondering, I was like, are they actually doing it because so he stops maybe attacking the other animals? Because to me, it's like, I don't know, they got around him and picked him up fine. It didn't really seem like that would be a super issue, but the way that they framed it again made it seem like, oh, we're imposing this thing on this animal for our benefit. You know, we're imposing this thing on Roy so that he's easier for us to handle. And that, to me, that kind of rubbed me a little bit the wrong way, because I wish that, and I don't know if this is the case or not, but I wish that they were doing it because they were like, oh, we need to do this thing to Roy so he stops attacking the other roosters and those sorts of things. But they never said that. And it's another thing where I wonder, is that truly the reason? But instead, they just kind of framed it as a human issue instead.
Yeah, I do not know.
Andy, I guess that's all my opinions. I liked it. I'm going to watch the next episode.
Let me talk about this, which is the rescue that they do in this episode. They rescue Ginger from what we're told is part working farm, part hobby farm. And it's like a pretty interesting rescue because it's almost framed like someone who has a dog that got hit by a car and the original guardians can no longer take care of them. So they call these other people, and it was again, looking for a bad guy. I was like waiting for it to be like they're rescuing this animal from a place of abuse, but instead it felt like this very heartwarming tale. And I don't know. What were your thoughts on that?
I think it just like went right past me. The fact where this sheep was being rescued from, where Ginger was being rescued from, because the way that they frame it, you know, like they're all hugging Ginger when she's leaving. And then like the mom is like crying. And I think they even say something like, oh yeah, it's like, you know, like letting go of a family member or something like that. I don't even think I thought about like, why do these people have this sheep in the first place? But you're absolutely right. They definitely, for whatever reason. So you said it was like a farm.
I rewound to see exactly what the mother and daughters said. It's part working farm, part hobby farm. So one can assume that they are exploiting animals and making money off of them. So this rescue feels like a real outlier to the situation that most animals would be rescued from.
Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. That definitely makes it seem more like, I don't know, these, and I'm not saying that, like, you know, the family that gave Ginger up, I'm not saying that like when they were crying at the end, those were fake tears or anything like that, but it certainly kind of cheapens that sort of relationship. It makes it seem more so like, oh yes, we love this animal so much, but we can't take care of her anymore and it's too much money. So here you go. Like we're just going to dump this animal off to someone else.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all in kind of how the editing is done to make people feel one way or the other about it. But to me, I feel like the undiscerning viewer would be like, what a heartwarming tale. And this is how animal agriculture works, is the local family farm. And if they've tried everything to help this sheep, and if they can't, they're going to call someone who can. And, you know, that's just purely not the case.
Yeah, I do hope that the rest of the season doesn't kind of continue that sort of attitude where it's like, oh yeah, we're a rescue, but we're friends with all these like local family farms, and they're like the real, cause I could totally see it. Something like they demonize the big animal agricultural businesses, and then they kind of promote the small family farms. I could see how it could turn into something like that. I hope that it doesn't, but I also hope that I'm like, I don't know. I hope that they address being vegetarian or vegan or something, if in fact they are, because it seems very hypocritical to run an animal, especially a farmed animal sanctuary, and still be eating those animals.
Dan is definitely vegan.
Nice.
And I was kind of just looking around their website, and I didn't look at every single page, but I did kind of word search on a few of them and didn't see the word vegan anywhere. But they do have sections where you can go and like look at various animals, and they talk about, you know, the cow section talks about cows in the dairy industry and the veal industry and things like that. So my hope is that even if the show remains entirely fluffy, that it will direct people to check out this sanctuary and the resources that they have, and it does lead people to make the connection. But I definitely, my ultimate hope is that the show itself will, I don't think we're ever going to get it to push a strong vegan message by any means, but I do hope that there will be a few lines here and there that help to get people to connect those dots. And I do think that the final moments of this episode were tiptoeing around that, with all the animals running in the sanctuary and the, I'm forgetting this person's name who was sort of crying and talking about that the animals deserve, this is the life that all animals deserve, to just be themselves, was a very touching moment. And so I hope we get more of that as the show goes on.
Yeah, and Andy, I'm just poking around the website a little bit, and there is this section where it's like you can click on the specific type of animal that they have. So for instance, clicking on turkeys, and it like just tells you a little bit about turkeys, and then it says like turkeys used for meat, and they do have some slightly more graphic footage, and it even says image from PETA.org underneath it. So I feel like if someone saw that, there's no confusing what side that they're falling on. If someone was not vegan or vegetarian, which certainly I imagine this show will bring people to this website, I feel like when they see that, they're going to know, you know, oh, there's some PETA people. Like, they're going to know what the, like what's going on here. I will say also, I love that on the website, it has like this, again, this just goes further to kind of personifying the animals. It, like you can click on, you can, there's little bios for every single animal that they have there. You know, it's like, hi, I'm Anna. And it's like, has the Anna's little backstory about Anna the pig and all that stuff. Likes, like mud baths, belly rubs. It's really, it's like pretty cute. And it, I think it does a lot to personify them, which is really cool.
Yeah. And I also like that on the website, they do have a section on getting started with food. And when you click it, it says, you know, what are your goals? This is the first thing. Reduce my impact, get a personalized plan, learn how to cook, or connect with a food coach. So I appreciate that it wasn't like, what are your goals? You trying to lose weight? You trying to cure cancer? You know, it's like very reasonable things that people could expect from looking into a resource like this. So
yeah, did you click on that kitchen companion tab?
That's what I'm looking at, baby.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, enjoy the delicious side of compassion, a guide to enjoying plant-based lifestyle. So definitely, I think it's at the very least, it seems like they're not promoting any like animal products.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've tabled next to them at VegFest. I know that they are a vegan organization.
Very cool.
So yeah, so that's our thoughts on Saved by the Barn. I guess we will be watching more of it. Maybe we'll do a follow-up bonus episode or something like that once the series has concluded, depending on how far we've made it into the series. But for me, even though I have nits to pick about, you know, lots of tiny little things, overall, knowing that this is kind of an unprecedented show to be on TV, to me, I'm looking at that as a positive thing, and I'm glad the show exists, and I hope that it can be a platform for good.
No, I definitely have a lot more. My takeaway was a lot more positive than negative, for sure. Like I said before, it's basically, I didn't really have anything where I was like, oh, I wish they didn't do that. It was more so like, oh, I wish there was this one more thing that they said about this.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There wasn't really any, I don't think there's any like, moments. So I appreciate that.
All right. Well, we of course want to hear what you have to say about this. If you saw it, if you have any thoughts on it, let us know. You can send in those thoughts, questions, comments, or concerns to thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And we would definitely love to hear from you.
Absolutely. All right, folks. Well, of course, no events coming up. You can go to compassionco.com if you want to pick up a shirt, and you can go to thebeardvegans.com if you want to support the podcast. Paul, I've done a little more looking around on this website, and it's kind of hidden. Like, you know, if you like highlight text and it seems like there's nothing there, but once you highlight it, you can see there's actually text there. There's one that I did that, and it says Paul Steller. So I click it, and it's a picture of your face holding several pucks of tofurkey. But the only accompanying text is just the following seven words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off. We've discussed this show before, correctly? We were kind of anticipating it, and so here we are. The episode came out literally today, so we're going to talk about it.
Did it come out today? I thought it came out last weekend.
Oh. I think it came out. Well, they don't know when we recorded this episode, Andy, so.
Okay, fine.
That was it a lamb or sheep?
Ginger was... Isn't a lamb a baby sheep?
Oh, yeah.